Cast by Alex Dyke slowly fade out right now, which tells you that this is not a normal episode of Radio Free Nintendo, and this is in fact an E3 episode. Once again, we thank Alex for providing us the opportunity to use his music during our E3 segments. On NintendoWorldReport.com, there's a link to his SoundCloud page. You can go check it out. Once again, thank you, Alex. Now, this week we're actually doing some catch-up stuff. We've got some audio from the deep, dark archives that had somewhat fallen to the wayside following the complete tumult that is E3. And we wanted to go ahead and get that out there this week. We would have recorded an RFN, but at some point this week, every member of RFN's cast was unavailable, which made recording an episode particularly difficult. And given the fact that we all felt pretty wrung out from the experience the week before, so with the exception of one podcast recorded that appears to be lost to the ether, this is it. These are our last E3 podcast recordings. First up, we have an interview with Kensuke Tanabe and Risa Tabata. They are the leads on Software Development Group 3 inside Nintendo Corporate. They are working with Skip to produce Chibi-Robo Ziplash. Johnny and Neil sit down and ask some interesting questions about the origin of some of the Chibi-Robo characters, where the idea of using real-world food products came from, and then Johnny advocates for more Amiibo. I'm sorry, we've lost him. Next up, we have an interview with Kensuke Tsukunaga of Bandai Namco about Project Cross Zone 2. Johnny has some questions, some of which I provided to him over text messages he prepped for the interview. If you want to know more about this mashup game that it certainly exists, you can stay tuned for that. And lastly, we have a final wrap-up segment where the guys who went to E3 sit down and just sort of let out their final thoughts before they all split ways and went home. Again, so next week we'll be back to normal RFN broadcasting. We'll have lots of games to talk about. I mean, Guillaume, John, and I had 3 weeks away from the show, essentially, to play games. Those who didn't do any E3 work, so of course they had way more time to play games than I did, but that's fine. We're not gonna get this personal. But we should have lots of games to talk about. Look forward to recording it, and we look forward to getting out to you guys next week. But in the meantime, go ahead and enjoy these interviews and this kind of last venting segment for E3. And we're going to turn it over to Johnny and Neil with Mr. Tanabe and Ms. Tabata to talk about Chibi-Robo Ziplash.
Okay, so Chibi-Robo has been in several different kinds of games over the years, and I think he's not known as an action star, so what gave you the idea to put Chibi-Robo in a 2D platform action game for the first time?
I got your question. Okay.
So when we first started thinking about this game, we were in discussion with the development company Skip, and they had this suggestion to have Chibi-Robo kind of, getting his cord and kind of, you know, moving it around above his head. And that was sort of our hint to start focusing a little bit on the action type of thing. So using this sort of motion, we could come up with, you know, various ideas. So for the previous Chibi-Robo games, we had more of the adventure aspect. And for those who were really big fans of Chibi-Robo, it was great. People loved it. But we couldn't quite say that it was widely known by, you know, a lot of people. So we sort of wanted to kind of branch out and explore more things. And Mr. Tanabe adds that, especially in the U.S. market, you know, we saw that would be a great place to, you know, expand that, you know, fan base.
He's such a great character, and he could do so many things. So, you know, I'm thinking back to the first Chibi-Robo game on GameCube. The theme of the game, I think, was cleaning, but also taking care of the environment, and also making people happy, and helping a family solve their problems and come closer together.
You know the game really well.
Yes.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
And how are these ideas being used in the new game, and how is Chibi-Robo, how is his character being made real in this new kind of game?
So not so much about carrying over the elements that we had before, but we sort of tried to look for a different perspective to start working on this game.
ちびロボっておっしゃってるようにあの人を助けて幸せにするキャラクターなんですけど今回はなんとあの地球を救うという今まではハウスを救うあのファミリーを救うだったんですけど地球を救うというとても大きなミッションで頑張ります
So as you pointed out, Chibirobo has this mission to basically be a helpful little robot and help people out. And before it was, while it was focused on the family, you know, likeand helping around the house and things. This time, it's on a larger scale. He'll be basically helping people all over the world. Just keep in mind that he's just a tiny little robot that's like 10 centimeters high.
もうちょっと具体的に言うと、あの宇宙人がその地球の資源を奪いに来るんですよ。
So to give you a little more detail, there are some aliens that will, you know, try to come to the Earth and they'll try to basically steal our resources. So first off, Chibirobo, everything starts in the space, right? And so Chibirobo by accident finds these aliens, you know, heading on their way to the Earth. And so he thinks, oh, well, I gotta, you know, try to stop them. And so that's how things start. And that's how the story involves, you know, Chibirobo going around different places on the Earth, just traveling all around the world. If you have a chance to have hands-on experience on the show floor, then you'll be able to see that part that I'm talking about here. By the way, just to add, he still sort of, you know, is a cleaner, like he helps around by picking up garbage around the courses too, so.
Kind of going off of that, I noticed in the demo that there was a lot of like product placement, like lots of potato chips, and I think like some Mentos as well. I guess are there different brands in Japan, and also kind of what is the point of having those that kind of product placement and brand placement inside of the game?
ゲームの中におっしゃってるように世界中のお菓子があるので、ご覧になってたお菓子だけじゃなくて、北米版であっても日本のお菓子も入っている。
So as you pointed out, there are a great variety of all these snacks in the game, and so you would notice that you also see sort of Japanese snacks on the U.S. version as well. So it's sort of like a good mix.
まあ、で、日本でも同じようにお菓子が入ってるってなるんですけど、ところでそのもうちょっと喋っていいですか？
Is that okay if we talk a little bit about this in, to give you a little more background on this?
Yeah, definitely.
チビロボってこんなちっちゃいじゃないですか。で、彼がすごいちっちゃいっていうのをゲームの中でどうやったらうまく感じてもらえるかなと思ったんですよ。
人間が出ないから。
そうなんです。
So you know, Chibirobo is so tiny, so we were trying to think of ways to express that to kind of give you a point of reference to show you how actually small he is in real life. And since this time around, there's no people around the game, so it's kind of like something that you can use to compare.
なんでこう自分の生活の中で見慣れてるものがチビロボの横に並んでくれるといいのになと思ったのがまず1個ありました。
So the first thing we thought of was placing things that you see in you know our real world so that you're used to seeing those things and by just kind of using that as a point of reference as a starting point.
で、あとまあ、 ゲームの中でプレイヤーがコレクタブルとしていろんなものを集めていけるといいなと思っていて、でそのコレクタブルを何かリアルなものにできないかな、つまりさっき言ってたチビロボとの比較の
And the second thing was so that we wanted to sort of add more to the list of things that you can collect throughout the stages. And so for that, we felt like it was a good idea to, you know, have these real life objects that are actually in the game for you to check it out.
最初だから世界中が舞台なんで、世界中の名産品がいいかなとか言ってて、こうなんか自由の女神とかあのピラミッドとかそんなものもあったらそんなのも面白いのかなってたんですけど、なぜもうそれだとサイズ比がすごいことになるので、
So because the story, you know, takes the game itself takes place around the world, like in various places, we thought of coming up with different like sort of monuments that you see around the world, such as like the Statue of Liberty or pyramids and stuff. But then that would be way too big for you to sort of use as a reference for a tiny little robot. So that didn't quite work well. And that's when I thought, oh, what is something that's around us all the time and makes people happy to see or to find in game? I personally also love snacks too, so I thought, oh, this is a great idea to implement in the game so that, you know, people will be really familiar with, and it's also something accessible for you if you would like to ever see it in real life.
Now I really regret, we were kind of joking this morning about going to buy a bag of lunch chips to bring, and I regret not doing that.
今日お菓子を田辺さんに持ってこようと思ったんですけど、ちょっと
持ってきてほしかったな、ミンス。惜しい。
結構でもこのことってすごく大変で、結局その協賛をしてくださるね、会社とか会社を見つけるのも結構大変だもんね。
So one challenge was to get, you know, many companies to sort of agree with our idea here to present these snacks in game.
海外はまあその NIN とか NIN の人たちにそれをやってもらったんですけど、日本の会社に関しては彼女が自分自身で日本の各地へ会社がずっと回ったんです。
So for the US version, NOA and NOE were the two, you know, groups that were in charge of, you know, handling that stuff here. But in Japan, she was basically the sole person, the contributor to this, going around the entire country in over 30, you know, speaking with 30 different companies or more than that. I'm not sure if you're aware, but around this time in Japan, it's super hot and humid. And so she, you know, wearing her business attire and walking around, you know, the whole country, traveling, you know, to present this idea to all these people. I myself was sitting in the office, you know, just chilling, thinking, oh wow, she is going through such a hard, you know, labor. And
tell us everything about Toby the plane. Because I love him already.
Wow, we already. Wow.
I want my Toby.
Amiibo.
Really?
I want the soft plush toy Toby, and I can give to my my niece and nephew their first
one. Toby the plane to
NPC.
Hi. それが好きで、まあ、それに関してちょっと説明をしていただきたいのと、あとアミーボが欲しいって言って、甥に、姪子にあげたいみたいな、はい、ぜひロッシーみたいな感じのぬいぐるみ、はい、ふわふわしたやつが欲しい。
まずトビーは進化して
る。トビーあれじゃないですか？トビーじゃなくて、
トビーじゃなくて
飛行機か、
あれですよね、違う世界に入った時の
あれについてってこと、
ミッションを与えてくれると
、実は飛行機だけじゃなくていろんなおもちゃが出てきて、
So first off, in Chibi-Robo, there are, you know, many different, you know, of these characters that will show up. So here you've probably only saw a Toby.
She
knows a little more about this.
あれって全部チビロボシリーズって全部なんか おもちゃが出てきてて、おもちゃが人間の見てないところで動き回る、でそういうのがこうNPC として出てくるのがずっと昔からあったんです。
So with these characters, these toys that are around, you know, the around us, like they're being set in a way that, you know, when people are not around, they these things kind of move around, these NPC characters.
なんで今ここから出てきてるトビーもおもちゃなんですよ。
So,Toby is also actually a toy, you know, that appears in this game as well. She says that you said maybe a plush, but maybe you're talking about like a, something like a made of a tin can? Or...
Oh, no, I meant like a soft toy.
Like as an amiibo, in amiibo form or something?
Maybe. He's so cute, and I like how his mouth moves when he talks. He dances. He's great.
So Skip, the development company, is actually the one that comes up with a lot of, you know, good ideas for this. But the set, you know, the setting behind the characteristic for him is such a like a energetic, you know, very energetic type of little boy.
It's very cute.
Yeah.
他にもいるんだ。他にもいるんです。すっごい個性的な。言いたいけど言えない。言いたいけど言えない。
There are other characters as well that will appear, and they would like to discuss about it, but that's something that you should look forward to once you have hands-on experience in the game.
Are they all cute?
すべてまあ可愛いのが可愛い。単に可愛いだけじゃなくて、ちょっとユニークです。Not just simply cute, but rather unique as well. To clarify, I'm sorry, did you mean toys in like actual, like as
you're
a, as a
about
toy itself?
Retail, right? Like, something you could buy.
Not just in game.
I'm fantasizing, but yes, I mean he looks like a toy because he's so small. I mean, he's bigger than Chibi Robo, but he's a very tiny plane. Mm-hmm. And I saw him, and he looks very soft in the game.
In the game.
And I love how his mouth moves and how mm-hmm. he dances, and he just has a great face. And I immediately thought, I wish I had a real one that I can play with.
実物のゲームでだけじゃなくて、まあ実物でもやっぱりすごくゲームで見た目が可愛いので、まあ本物があればそれをまあ自分でぜひぜひ買いたいというようなアイデアなんですけど。
シミロボが大ヒットしてそういう声が上がってきたら実現できるかも。
You know, when Chibi Robo becomes very, very popular here, and there are many, many more fans like you, which is great, then that's our best, you know, shot to get all these products out there, you know, if you'd like, if you're interested, which is, you know, thank you very much for the comment.
ちなみに今ずっとスキップさんが開発会社と言ってるんですけど、もう一個バンパルさんって会社も一緒にコラボレーションして作ってくれてるんですね。
So I mentioned Skip as the development company, but there's also another one that's called Vampool, and these two companies are working together to develop this game. Vampool was known for creating the two past games based on Tingle, and
Dylan's Rolling Rust.
Yeah.
So for the
super sticker, it was actually created by Intelligent Systems. So from Vampool, he knew the president, Mr. Kudo, and so he sort of asked for his help, you know, to kind of, you know, get some support to work on that game. So he's had done some business with Mr. Kudo prior to that on the SNES, on the game for SNES Mario RPG, and so because of that, they sort of have that relationship built up already. So. He knew it was kind of like a difficult thing to, you know, get someone from a different company to sort of, you know, help you out on this on that project, but you know, he was kind enough to kind of help us out. But I'm sorry, back to the main topic here.
Kind of talking about the developers as well, I noticed out on the show floor there was like, you know, a little copyright for Skip, and there was also a copyright that mentioned Bandai Namco. What's their involvement with the game?
So that's because we, before the game for the GameCube came out, originally we were working with Skip and Bandai back then. That's what their name was, right? So. But at that time, the project itself was put on hold. So around that time, I don't quite remember what the situation was, but Mr. Miyamoto had a chance to kind of take a look at the character, Chibirobo, and he really liked it. So he said, oh, why don't we make a game, you know, based on this character? And that's sort of how that project started. So to add, not just not for the game itself, but when Chibirobo, the character itself, was created, that's when Bandai was also involved. So.
And about what time was that? Like early GameCube era, or
GameCube no, あの時でしたね。あの GameCube 時代の初期。いや、初期かどうか、いつから開発してたか知らんけど、そうやね。GameCube
になってから作ってはって、それがなくなって。
He remembers for sure if it was for it was around the time of GameCube, but not, you know, exactly sure on the timeline, but it was probably like the end of it, if that makes sense.
2005,
yeah, for I think the timeline. Well, the development probably takes longer than that. かかりますので、リリースされた時とは全然またそれ以前の話になりますからね。
I guess, well, outside of the actual game development timeline, is there any kind of, like, cohesive story from game to game with the Chibirobo games? And if there is, where does Chibirobo Ziplash kind of fall on that timeline?
Oh, if I could add to that, I think in the demo, Toby mentions that he knows Chibirobo from TV. So,
you really love Toby.
But it made me wonder. I felt there was maybe part of the Chibirobo story that I don't know because I haven't played the DS games. There were one of them didn't come to America, and the other was very hard to find here. So, yeah, what is the backstory? Why is Chibirobo famous in this game? Why do other people know who he is?
まあ、両方ね。そうですね。最初の、まあ、大まかなその、チビロボの、あの、まあ、時系列のタイムラインっていうのは何かありますか？今作はどこに、それに位置するかっていうのと、まあ、彼は、過去作、そんなに、あの、DSのゲームはできなかったんで、まあ、あの、彼も、トビーが好きって言ってましたけれども、あの、トビーは知ってるっていう、はい。
すでに知ってるっていうようなことを言ってるので、まあそれにその関係性とかも、あの、もし何かお話できることがありましたら教えてください。あのね、メーカーが発表してないんですよ、何年みたいな。There's
not anything clear in terms of timeline. So, as you've probably heard, there's the Orange Corporation, which is the one that this company that creates these robots, and they basically, you know, distribute the robots to people around. So it's in that sense, it's sort of like time-wise, it's probably in the near future.
ただ、アートとかそういうのは ちかというと60年代とか70年代のアメリカ意識してるからちょっとギャップはあるかな。
But there's a little gap because if you see the art style in the game, it sort of reminds you of the sort of the 60s. So that's for the GameCube to clarify. The second one that mentioned is Chibi-Robo Park Patrol that was released here. But there's another one that the one that you mentioned that wasn't released here, which the Japanese is Okaeri Happy Chibi-Robo. So Park Patrol was sort of around the same timeline as the one for GameCube, the first one. So in the GameCube version, you see that there's the little girl Jenny, who's about 8 years old, and then later on, she would appear as a single mother. So that's sort of like about 20 years or so later down the road, when she comes up again. So this title is, we have sort of like an idea that's a little after that. As if you consider that there are snacks that you see now, you know, in our time, then that sort of gives you an idea that might be close to the present. So they explain the reason why Toby is mentioning that he already knows Chibi-Robo is because it's widely known that Orange Corporation is the one that, you know, creates the robots and distributes it to the world. So if that answers your question, right? So that's sort of like how he acknowledges the existence of Chibi-Robo. Sorry about that.
So, I think my last question, I don't know if you have any more, but I know Nintendo has another character who's also very small and who encounters these real-life products and much larger creations, and so I was wondering if you think Chibi-Robo might ever encounter Captain Olimar and the Pikmin, since they seem
the same size. To be honest, there's nothing, you know, set in stone in regards to that. So that's, you know, an interesting idea. So it's something that I could definitely, you know, speak with Mr. Miyamoto to sort of like add that collaboration.
And I guess I have one more. Are there any ideas from past games that you've produced, like say Metroid Prime or Donkey Kong Country or other projects you've worked on with Skip that have kind of made their way into Zimlash?
Taking the example of platform games in general that they've been working on, such as the Donkey Kong, there's a lot in terms of gameplay experience that they've used as sort of reference to bring it up and, you know, to look into the terrain and, you know, to sort of judge what can be easy or, you know, difficult to get through in one stage, to get a good balance and, you know, give the players a good feeling, you know, as they get through everything. So in that aspect, there's, you know, some stuff that they've, you know, took into account to work on this game. There's something that we also wanted to work on to basically differentiate, you know, Chibi-Robo with the other, you know, typical platformer games. So other games like, you know, Mario games, like typical side-scrolling games, there's, you know, the jumping aspect, you were jumping between platforms, but we didn't quite want to just have that as the main thing. So we really focused on how to make a good use of the you know, Chibi-Robo's plug and cord to sort of like, you know, get the actions involved around that.
で、あの、コードを使うんだよっていうことをこう、テーマにして、
さらにもう一個新しく今作ならではのシステムとしてっていうことで、行動を伸ばして反射させるゲームっていうことで作ってます。
So not only that, but we also, you know, included the feature to have the cord to be extendable throughout the stage, and also to have it, you know, bounce around the wall so that you can kind of, you know, climb up higher places that you wouldn't normally
get. I like that a lot.
Ah, so that's good.
Cool. So ever since they were working on, you know, titles like Donkey Kong, like with the typical side-scrolling games, they sort of wanted to, you know, play around with the camera a little bit more to change, you know, to see if we, there could be any sort of surprise that we could present to the players as they're going through the stage.
トロッコのステージとかでカメラがこうぐーって回ってるような風に見せるっていうのをやってました。
So like in Donkey Kong Returns, you have the camera sort of, not the camera, but the character is actually moving back and forth in two different platforms. And in Tropical Freeze, you see sort of this camera following the carts around Donkey Kong in an interesting way.
今回もやっていて、昨日あのツリーハウスライブとかでも、ツリーハウスライブでもお見せしてたんですけれども、今回はカメラが90度曲がるところがあります。
I'm not sure if you saw the Treehouse Live segment where we presented Chibi-Robo, but there's a portion where, you know, the camera itself would sort of turn 90 degrees to show a different, completely different angle of where Chibi-Robo is going to go. So this is one of the things that we also included in the game to sort of get that little surprise, you know, that you get as you get through the stage, you know, looking at the stage from a different perspective.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We're very happy to have Chibi-Robo coming back to
America. Ah, that's great news.
Yep. No, you also worked on Captain Rainbow, right?
Yeah. Yes, we have. You know, wow. Captain Rainbow.
I would love to see that.
Really?
I tried to play in Japanese. I
And give peace.
Right.
Yes, of course. So, I'm here speaking with Mr. Kensuke Sukunaga, if I pronounced it correctly.
Yes.
And could you tell me your role with Project Cross Zone 2?
Tsukunaga-san のプロジェクトクロスゾーンにおける役割を教えてください。
あ、はい。Project Cross Zone 2の、プロデューサーを務めます。
Well, it's good. I'm the main producer for the Project Cross Zone 2.
The main producer, great.
Yes. Yeah.
I spoke with some fans of the first game, or the last game, I guess not the first game, and they were very interested in what made you want to make another one of these games and what makes it different from the last one.
まあ、以前その前作のファンと話もして、はい、まあ、その聞いたところ、まあ、その自作作ることに対して彼が興味。So,
It's great to hear, like, there's lots of fans in the overseas too for those who play that Project Cross Zone. And we thank you for all the fans that enjoy the game. And then for the, if you tell us about that, what differential between the first one and this Cross Zone 2 is about characters or titles. It's gonna now newly joined into this Project Cross Zone 2. And then, of course, there is a character who's continued, you know, and low into Project Cross Zone 2 from the prequel. But there is about, maybe, say, 50% of the characters' titles are coming from brand new titles or brand new characters. So we hope, you know, there's lots of characters we haven't announced yet, but, you know, in the future, we'd like to announce and those characters and we'd like, you know, people to, you know, surprise about it and hope, you know, they're going to excited about it too.
With so many characters from so many different companies all coming together in one game, what kinds of challenges do you face and what kinds of solutions have you found to keeping each of these characters authentic to what their fans expect, and also allowing them to interact with the characters from everything else.
Of course, not only Bandai Namco Entertainment character titles, but also we need to ask the Sega game, Sega Interactive, and also Capcom about, you know, what this Project of Zone 2 will be like. And we explain the concept and of the game and everything in detail to them. But unfortunately, because of, you know, we have the Project of Zone 1, and of course both Sega and also Capcom are really, you know, supportive to our project. And also as well as this title, this time too. So that's really, you know, like, are fortunate that they are really, you know, have given a great support to make this game more entertaining and to bring those characters into this game.
で、まあ、ユーザーの、皆さんが当然好きな、大好きな作品を当然我々がお借りしているっていうのがあるので。
And also, of course, in order to develop this game, and there's, various characters and titles, multiple character titles, we are, you know, borrowing from the Sega and the Capcom into this game. And also, as you said, there's lots of fans for each title, each characters. And they are expecting, you know, we to see that they're authentic to the original, you know, titles and the characters. It's represent, visualized in this game too. So, of course, the very first thing is, you know, an important thing is all the development staff and myself too, to respect each characters and each titles. Otherwise, we can really recreate those characters into this game. So, and also we had to research each of the titles in detail, in depth. So that we need to understand how the user and enjoy, how the users know which those characters, how they are attractive is. So that after that, that's our first step to make the characters live and not live, to make visualize into this game as like an original game.
で、もちろん、その、各作品の世界観であったりとか、キャラクター性が違うものが、まあ、一つのゲームに、プロジェクトクロスオン2として。
So, of course, each of the titles' characters, having different, you know, world atmosphere or world setting, world settings. And, it's also like, it's really unique that to assemble those characters into one place. So that's pretty much, yeah, difficulty or like a challenges we mentioned all the time. But, and it, that's one of the element, key fact is that we need to find out some of the common or similarity in between those titles and characters. For example, as we said, say the category of the fighting games. If say fighting games, there's a Ryu from the Street Fighter, or like Akira from Virtua Fighter, or the Jin from Tekken. Those are, you know, category from the fighting games, the famous fighting games, and they have some similarity in between that during the categories. Also, another example, say for ninja. If you say ninja, then there's a Hiryu from the Strider series, and the Hotma from Shinobi, and also the Natsu from the Soul Calibur 5. You know, and also there's a Virtua Fighter on Kagemaru too. So if you find those similarities or some common elements from each of the story of, titles, then if we assemble that into the category and put place into the original storyline, then we find out some, you know, links between the character and titles, and we can, you know, like make some like other link or bond in between the other titles. So after we work it out that kind of, you know, puzzles, and then we find out that maybe those characters can battle together with pairing, or maybe these characters can, you know, have some encounter and make some, you know, different chemistry of the storyline. That's how we're gonna create this game is, and then how we can, you know, make more interesting and exciting with keeping the authentic of each character of that, you know, or their uniqueness or characteristics.
So you mentioned research earlier, mm-hmm. and I'm very curious about this because I would think that some of the research for a game like this would include playing mm-hmm. a lot of other video games. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a game made for people who play a lot of video games mm-hmm. from many different companies, and they're interested in those characters and how they might meet up in a fantasy world where they can all live together. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, when you're preparing to create these games and you're playing so many other games for your research, have you discovered any games that you had not played before that really you really, really liked or you found very interesting and surprising?
まあ、今作さっきリサーチをしているっていうことを聞かましたけども、まあ、それにとってとても興味を持ってました。まあ、このゲーム そのリサーチっていうタイトルが多いです。まあ、過去のゲームたくさんありますけれども、やっぱりそれを。Think, after a while, playing a lot of those Siders games, and then, of course, each of them have, you know, different fight, different genre, different, you know, like, type of that, gameplay styles, game experience, and the character, you know, how they visualize in each of the games. And then, of course, the, fighting games have, you know, those kind of specific fighting styles in each of those fighting games. And that's how the fans enjoy about it. Also, for adventure games, of course, they have a different type of adventure game style, and each of those adventure titles have different, you know, various way of the, their game experience. That's how the fans entertain about it. So, but when they are integrated into this game, Project Cross Zone 2, you know, we think the most, main feature that we like the fans to look into in this game is how we can, you know, visualize or recreate the characters, those characters in different genre, different fight, different game experience. How we can recreate and vividly represent those characters as is, like they had in the original game, like faithful and authentic to visualize in this game. So when they play this game, Project Colossal 2, this is not fighting, actual fighting game. This is not like, you know, adventure game like the original. But their favorite characters, user's favorite character, is really exist as is. But they can experience a different way, different genre, different fighting, different style in this game. So that's how the, we can represent, and that's how I like to tell the users to enjoy in this game, with the use their favorite characters.
So I know there's a long history of crossover games in Japan with Super Robot Tyson and many other examples, and it's almost a kind of game on its own in Japan that people are familiar with, and that's not really the case here in the West. And so I've heard of these games over many years, but when we found out that the last game, Project Cross Zone, was coming to the West, we were all very surprised, and some people very excited, of course, as well. But it's not a kind of game that we thought we would ever be able to play in our own language. And I'm curious what kinds of reactions you got from the fans in the West, and whether that has influenced your ideas for the sequel, and how you might, now that we know much earlier this time that the game is coming to the West, so you have expectations, and I'm wondering how you're building those into the sequel.
そうですね。まあ、最初、まあ、日本ではスパロボとか、このものがあって、そういうタイプのゲーム、コンサイのストラテジー RPG ゲームっていうのは、まあ、歴史的に結構たくさんあるじゃないですか。ただ、まあ、それらのゲームはまあ。So, it was great that lots of people, users, enjoyed the Project Cross Zone 1, even though, you know, it's not familiar type of game in the Western, you know, game market. And then, you know, we, of course, we, you know, look into those fans' comments in the website, you know, their first comments existing there. And also we are asking to, you know, our, US, the Bandai Namco Entertainment America, or Europe, those staff who's, you know, in charge of the Project Cross Zone 1, about how they had a feedback from the community or some people's about, you know, how they enjoy the game or how they like to, you know, revamp the game system kind of stuff. That is why, in the Project Cross Zone 2, and the character roster, and also the game system itself, we have, you know, made a modification or changes. So, you know, it's based on how they comment in there, and, you know, they give the feedbacks. But of course, you know, this type of game is still a challengeable title for us. Because, you know, not that much familiar as Japan or like Asia, you know, this type of game is in the, it's compared to the US and EU. So that, we are, you know, keep challenged to deliver this type of game to the Western market. And that is why, we are announcing this game in the West, you know, like, in April and also this time E3, and then try to deliver the new, you know, playable demo in the, you know, in the open. So like we like to, you know, give them more chance to the Western, you know, people to play this game in anywhere, any place, events like that. So, our expectation is, you know, to deliver this game as many people in the Western, And also after that, we like to have more feedbacks from the people who play this game. And those voices, those comments will give us, you know, really, you know, like a stimulate, you know, our motivation to maybe create some of the, you know, the future titles too. So that's going to be give, you know, more energy to us. So what we like to say is, you know, please, you know, expectate our this game and please give us more feedbacks.
Okay.
Yes.
So, I think the only game, the only crossover game I can think of that's so famous in the West is Super Smash Brothers. It's a different kind of game. Mm-hmm. It's a fighting game mm-hmm. instead of what you're doing with Project CrossZone. Mm-hmm. But of course, it brings together many different franchises and now mm-hmm. many different companies. Of course, with Sonic and mm-hmm. and Ryu and Pac-Man and Mega Man all coming together. And I think it reminds me a little bit of what you're doing with mm-hmm. Project CrossZone. And of course, that game was developed also with Bandai Namco. I'm curious if your team or if you yourself have had discussions with people who worked on Super Smash Brothers with Mr. Sakurai mm-hmm. about the similar kinds of challenges and the similar kinds of opportunities that you have when you mix all these very, very different kinds of characters together in one game.
I see. まあ、欧米で有名なのはこのクロスボールだったスーパースマッシュブラザーズがやっぱ有名で、まあこれもご存知の通り、まあ違うフランチャイズ、違う作品からキャラクター、まあソニックだったり。Even though, the Bandai Namco is creating a Smash, Super Smash Bros. But then, actually, I don't really have that much chance to, discuss about that kind of crossover, development style with them. we don't have that much time kind of stuff, so. But, what's, personally thinks about the differential between a Super Smash Bros. And the Project CrossZone is, for the, it's about how, the way of development. It's not like actual development, but the concept-wise. For example, what I personally think is, Super Smash Bros. Is, it's, basically, it's, we think that characters are joined in, from different franchises in one place, but that's based on how the Nintendo's world atmosphere, world settings is. And then, it's more like a type of collaboration. So the different Pac-Man or the Mega Man or those Sonics, they are, you know, joined as a collaboration into their you know, base settings of the war settings as a more like a Nintendo taste of war settings. So they are joined but collaborated, and they and it makes more creating their Super Smash Brothers world game. And if, on the other hand, the Project CrossZone world is like a more three companies. Game companies crossover. It's like a different. It's like a slightly different. So that's why it goes crossover. So we are blending the characters or titles. Equal amount of titles, characters are going to be joined in one place. It's not something like we have like some world setting at the very beginning and then bring the characters. But we are making it and borrowing the characters from three different companies and bring into the one place.
Mm.
In the blank one place. So that, for example, Super Smash Bros., they have like a storyline, but that's more based on the Nintendo kind of storyline, and they also join the character into there. But in the CrossZone, it's more like, you know, we have like original kind of storyline, and then within the original storyline, we are bring the characters into there to make them involved into the story and involve and count to the other characters.
Mm.
So that's kind of more complexity into the story and kind of, that's given them more depth into the story as well as more giving them a sense of a crossover instead of collaboration. I think that's kind of concept or thoughts. It's difference between giving some differential between those Super Smash Brothers and the CrossZone to game and concept. Right? So that's how I think about the concept. It's kind of difference between those two.
Sure. Yes. Of course, your game has much more story than Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
So I think my final question, hopefully a fun question for you, I have to think as someone who works on this kind of game, you must always be thinking of how different things would cross over, just as many of us have, of course, even when we're children and up mm-hmm. through adulthood, you think, you know, what if this character could get in a fight with this character and it seems like they would never meet, but if they did, what would happen? So, outside of your game, is there any kind of crossover or meeting of characters that you would love to see sometime that you think would be the most exciting from any kind of franchise, any kind of medium?
Okay, so my answer is not really about a character or like some type of special character, but some different more thoughts about crossover concept. For example, for Super Robot War, that, you know, he was also involved in the project too, deeply. You know, that's a kind of dream, you know, collaboration, or not collaboration, but crossover between the, you know, having different franchises, robots, and get it in one place. And the Project Cross Zone is also another dream, you know, miracle crossover. That's gonna be over the, you know, publishers, game publishers. Now, what's my, you know, desire, or I kind of, you know, daydream about a crossover is no characters, no titles, but how, because I'm the one of the, you know, producer or creator of the game. So how, what happened, you know, if we're gonna have to, you know, all the game creators from different publishers, different industry, gather in one place and give you some different ideas, different, well, you know, technologies. And what happened, that kind of chemistry is gonna be created any new type of game into the world. That, you know, that Kanaka-san, I, daydream about, you know, like that's a miracle crossover into the, and it's gonna be really fun if it's gonna be realized.
Yes, I hope so. Okay, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And best of luck with completing your game, and look forward to it.
Thank you very much.
So E3 is officially over. We're hanging out here in the media room, just gathering together. Thought I'd just record some quick thoughts in case we can keep for good podcast fodder here. So I'm sitting here next to Justin. And Justin, now the show's over, what are your thoughts on just the show in general, Nintendo or otherwise?
I think it could have been a better show for Nintendo, for sure. But Mario Maker is amazing. I can't get enough. They kept adding new levels every day, so it gave me a reason to keep coming back to that game. It's a lot of fun. I can't wait for it to come out in September. With that book, too.
Yeah, no, that looks really good. What about, did you check out any other booths other than Nintendo? Was there anything that you thought was particularly interesting?
Yeah, I walked around. I checked out South Hall, which was a lot of the third parties, mostly. I walked around for a bit. Made my yearly trip to the Video Game History Museum exhibit, and this year was kind of a letdown. I feel like they had less stuff in there, but there was more space. I don't know why there were less items out this year. It was weird. I walked away disappointed, though I did get to try a reproduction of the Nintendo World Championships NES cart, but I didn't get to see my final score because the game hung up.
Oh, no. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
Chris, could I bother you for a minute?
Yeah.
So E3's finally over. Mm-hmm. Three long days. Our legs are tired.
Oh,
knees are full of liquid or whatever. What are your thoughts overall on the show? Nintendo's presence, maybe some of the third parties?
It was very interesting to see this year because this is the first time I've been to E3 in about 5 years, and while I was underwhelmed by the Nintendo Digital Event presentation, I did enjoy everything that I played on the show floor for the most part. But seeing everybody kind of react online so negatively, I'm just kind of surprised. It just kind of goes to show what it's like actually getting your hands on with some of these games versus just straight up only knowing about them, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So are there any particular games that you think maybe people online maybe aren't able to appreciate as well as someone who's, you know, on the show floor? Maybe perceptions are skewed off from what you think, you know, the quality of the game is?
Yeah, I think I think the Metroid Prime Blast Ball is definitely a lot of fun, but you just gotta know that it's a spin-off. You know, series and franchises are allowed to have spin-offs. It might not be your cup of tea, but at the same time, it's not the end of the world that it exists. You know, and to see people crap on something, you know, that obviously has a lot of passion put behind it, it just seems kind of silly.
Well, I agree. I waited, I don't know, 30 minutes in line. It was a surprisingly long demo because they would, like, spend 2 minutes just showing everyone how to play the game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I went in there kind of going, yeah, wait 30 minutes for this. I played, like, I actually had a lot of fun with it. You know, it's a fun little mode. And, you know, I think we forgot that when we first saw it at the championship back on Sunday, the first one was like, hey, this looks like it's a lot of fun. But we were thinking it was kind of maybe a standalone eShop title or something by NST. And when we found out it was part of a Metroid thing, all of a sudden we're like, this isn't Metroid. But, you know, people didn't complain about Metroid Prime Pinball, so
yeah.
I look at this kind of the same way.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, if you really think about it, this game existing isn't taking resources away from another Metroid game. Because I'm sure another Metroid game is in development, you know, probably by Retro or maybe by another studio, but this is what, you know, Next Level Games wanted to make. And, you know, I'm fairly certain a proper Metroid game is being made. So, yeah, I think people just kind of need to calm down about Federation Force and Blast Ball. You know, they're not taking a Metroid game away from you. They're expanding that universe.
If anything, reminding folks that, hey, this franchise still exists.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, the series is called Metroid. It's not called Samus. You know, there could be tons of different stories within the Metroid universe. I mean, if you want to compare it to something, compared to like the Star Wars just... vast universe where there's so many different stories, so many different perspectives, and so many different characters that you know, it focuses on. And, you know, you shouldn't really get mad at something else going on in the same universe, but still having that name. I mean, you're still going to get, you know, your mainline thing in that franchise.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you very much for your time, Bert.
All right, no problem.
Let's say hi to Aaron Kaluska here. So we're making the rounds here, post E3 thoughts. Floor just closed. Uh-huh. Is there anything that particularly stood out to you, either in a good way or a bad way of this year?
I would say not really. It was a fairly year. It was kind of expected, at least from my perspective, that I wasn't really thinking there'd be a lot there, and there wasn't. What was there was, on Nintendo's side, played very well. But yeah, nothing really stood out in my mind in either direction.
Yeah, what surprised me, even making the rounds for some of the other platforms, you know, there was a ton of games, and, you know, Microsoft and Sony, a lot of indie stuff, but a lot of the big hitting things that were, like, announced, they're not things that you're playing on the show floor. So even the other platforms, I felt like there was, it's kind of just underwhelming. There's a lot of cool little things, but nothing really wowed me that was playable on the floor.
I guess, as you mentioned, the indie stuff is pretty cool. Last night there was the Mix event, and there were a lot of cool sort of in-progress games there. The bigger stuff is, I don't know, it's just, you know, a lot of sequels and then a lot of things that you can't even play, so not really sure what they were going for. I guess, you know, the other thing that's kind of big this year is VR, as it was last year. But that hasn't quite hit the consumer market yet, so it'll be interesting to see what happens, I guess, within the next year once other people actually can get their hands on this thing. Because I guess that's one of the tricky things about these kinds of technologies is just you really need to put it on and play it to get a good sense of what it is. And that, given the number of people that are here, is always problematic.
What is the dumbest / best thing you saw on the floor this week?
Dumbest / best. Actually, no.
Well, there was something I saw Johnny and the other NWR folks playing. I have to look up the name of it. It was something with Beast in the title. It was in the Sony booth.
Okay.
And it was stupid fun because you could barely control these characters, and it was like controlling molasses or like a Jell-O creature, and everything was very slow. Your goal was just to push the other guy off or knock him over the edge. I should have looked up the name of this thing, but it was just so stupid fun. But it shouldn't be fun. It was one of these things where you had to work at making bad controls. The controls are intentionally sloppy, and it's dumb fun. It's like even when you know how the controls work, you still don't really know how they work. You know, kind of like something like Nobby W Boy or something. You know. So that was good fun, four player madness. I think that was probably the stupidest / best thing I saw on the floor today. Anyway, thank you very much, Aaron.
Thanks.
All right, Brian finally joined us here, so I'm just making the rounds here and trying to get people's thoughts after the show is closed. Overall, what are your thoughts? This is your first E3, so what was your favorite thing about the show floor this year? What was maybe the least favorite thing about the whole event?
Well, I can tell you right now that's all over. The least favorite part is my legs, because they're pretty much broken down at this point. But my favorite part is, you know, the overall experience. You know, this is the first thing of any kind I went to. I mean, I've been to Comic-Con, but that's more like comic books and all that. But coming here and seeing all the new video games is pretty amazing. My favorite game was probably Mario Maker, and I enjoyed that a lot. And I enjoyed Mario and Luigi a lot. And right now I just got through playing Mighty No. 9, and that was really cool too.
Was there a particular Mario Maker level that stood out to you as particularly memorable here?
Probably the one that I actually beat, which was the one where with Link in it. That one. And I actually beat that one, so that was pretty cool. And I don't remember any other level, but it was pretty enjoyable. I created my own level, and it was pretty crappy, but I got through it. And with more tools, the more that I learn more with the tools, I think the better levels I'll make.
Yeah, a maker is a difficult thing to show off at E3, and we did that last year too. And, you know, we're fooling around, and I think it helped the developers last year get some ideas of what they could add to the feature. But you could tell that this year they were not really pushing the maker. The closest I saw was someone who said, well, you know, if you want to edit this level that's already created, you can change something. I think that was the way to give you a taste of it without, because it takes, you know, hours and hours to craft something like what you're playing that's really good.
Definitely, yeah. And they showed me the airship level in, I think, Super Mario World. And that's the one I created. And it wasn't any good, but, you know, figuring out all the tools is pretty easy, like how you could put Lagatus up there with fire flowers. That was pretty unique. And the thing that I really like the most about it is the fact that things that weren't in Mario 1, for example, like enemies from Super Mario World or Super Mario 3, they actually made them into Super Mario 1.
Yeah, they kind of like de-evolved the sprites and stuff.
De-evolution of everything.
It's Mario, man. It's a Mario movie. It's all coming back.
Yeah, that is my favorite part. And I want to see more about the spiny helmet kind of deal. I was wondering what that was about. I didn't get to play that when I was playing it, but I want to see more of that too.
Cool. Did you check out any other booths? Maybe something on Microsoft or Sony that stood out to you?
The Rare Collection. Oh, I'll get that totally.
Yeah, really, really good stuff.
Yeah. My favorite thing about it is I was asking the guy about if I could use my save states from my Xbox 360, and he said, yeah, as long as they're all backwards compatible. That's probably my favorite thing about it, because I never got to beat Viva Pinata 2, so I want to make sure I want to go up over there and beat Viva Pinata 2. And, you know, I guess I'll finally try Battletoads. I mean, I've heard the horror stories about everybody playing that game, but I want to give it a shot. I never got to play until it comes out in August, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, the Rare Collection has a bunch of things you may not have heard about if you just heard it in passing. Like, there's a sense essentially like an NES Remix type feature in there, where like we can call them snapshots or something. Yeah. They're not as quirky or as like fast paced as in NES Remix, but it's still like it's nice sampling of all the different games they got in there.
Oh, yeah.
I think they also told me that your achievements will come over from the 360 version.
Yeah,
they
told me that too.
Yeah. So a lot of value in that package. I was pretty impressed there. So finally, Microsoft's kind of making use of why they bought out Rare in the first place, really.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's so many titles out there. I mean, I think everybody's first experience with Rare was like Donkey Kong Country, because that's one of their most prolific titles ever. But looking at all the NES games, like there's a skiing one, I think it's called Slalom or something like that. I remember playing that recently.
Probably Slalom.
Yeah, there you go. And I want to play more of that. I want to see how that's integrated. I want to play Battletoads. So I want to play, I think, some of the earlier titles. I forget which ones they are, but I'm looking forward to playing all of it.
Yeah, Johnny and I played some multiplayer RC Pro-Am too, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's one I want to play.
It's four-player compatible too, that's really cool.
Awesome, I want to play all of that.
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, well, that closes things up for this little mini-podcast. Hopefully it'll make your way someplace. I don't know if it'll be posted on RFN or one segment of something else, but hope you guys enjoyed our little quick post-C3 closure discussion here.